You are listening to the very special Christmas episode of the Punk News Podcast, episode number 227. Deck the halls with boughs of holly. Fa la 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 la. Tis the season to be jolly. Fa la 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 la. Who's that?
I'll get it. Oh, it's you, the Punk News Podcast listener.
Hi, we're so glad to see you're here at the Punk News Hovercraft office.
You know, we're just setting up Christmas decorations and waiting for Santa.
I can't wait to see him.
Me too.
Me three. I'm so glad to see you, the Punk News listener.
And that's just what the holidays are all about, seeing friends, old and new.
And presents.
Ricky!
I mean, the holidays are about seeing friends.
We're glad you could make it, listener. Come in, have a seat.
I'll get you some hot cocoa.
You're just in time. The tree is trimmed and the ham is in the oven. We were just about to sit down and have a nice chat in front of the fire about punk rock.
I love Christmas.
And speaking of wonderful Christmas topics, let's talk about this wonderful Christmas topic. The 2015 Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees have been admitted. This year, the people let into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame include Joan Jett, punk rock mainstays Green Day, as well as Lou Reed, Stevie Ray Vaughan, Bill Withers, the Paul Butterfield's Blues Band, despite my predictions that they would not get in, as well as Ringo Starr. He got the award for musical excellence. He was also awarded in 1988. He got in with the Beatles. Somewhat surprisingly, the following acts did not get in. NWA did not get in. The Smiths did not get in. And some other bands didn't get in as well. Were you guys shocked by this? Were you guys surprised? Or is this what you thought would happen with regards to the Rock and Roll 2015 Hall of Fame? Related, NWA, they didn't get in. Should NWA be eligible? Not that they're not a phenomenal group, but is the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, or is it the Music Hall of Fame?
I want to say that the era of hip-hop that NWA really represents was so much the successor to, like, to the popular youth movement that rock and roll was up until that point, that they kind of qualify to me. Like, even if the Rock Hall doesn't go and, you know, start commemorating every, you know, popular hip hop act or whatever from that point forward, I still think that, like, including NWA, you know, including bands kind of that ilk, especially because of some of the rocky kind of stuff that NWA would have done, I think is valid. But, although, like, on the, I would maybe not consider NWA yet, but that's by the same token is that I wouldn't consider Green Day yet. So there's that, but that's a separate issue. I don't think they're ineligible. I think that it does open up a bit of a can of worms as to, let's say you go down the path of, you know, where you're going to start including all sorts of hip hop as you go forward into the Hall of Fame. Well, then, as you start to get, as that third, what is it, the 30-year window?
No, 25. Since 25,
okay.
Albums.
As that 25-year window starts to creep further and further into the 90s, you're going to get more acts that were big popular acts that were maybe a little bit less hip-hop, maybe a little bit more R&B, and then they start following into these, you know, maybe a little bit less R&B, maybe a little bit more just sort of like vocal pop. And then at that point, you're really diluted as to what, you know, what you're bringing in. I mean, you can really get far from that, you know, we're going to start from Chuck Berry and go forward thing that the Rock Hall does. And I don't know what happens at that point. It's not necessarily the Rock Hall's problem, I guess. It's more of just, you know, come the 90s, rock was not necessarily the main gig as far as pop culture was concerned. So, you know, whether they're following, you know, what's popular, or they're following, I guess, what's more traditional rock and roll, you know, as you start to get into the 2000s and stuff like that, you're going to get bands that were technically hit rock bands but never would have sold anything like any of the earlier acts that got in. So yeah, it gets muddy. I mean, I'm cool with NWA getting in there, but it does start to open up the question about, like, you know, what is this place trying to commemorate?
Yeah, I mean, to me, this is nothing this really isn't any more different than, you know, the Oscars, where the movie business put, you know, pats himself on the back for a job well done for the year. So to me, this really just is the Music Hall of Fame. I was also kind of on the boat, like, I don't know why NWA got nominated, because to me they're hip-hop, they're not rock and roll, and they're just mutually exclusive to me. But that also, I mean, listen, Aretha Franklin's a soul artist, but she got in. So also, I guess this was bound to happen, but I just kind of cringe that Green Day is in there, because they haven't really made anything good for over a decade now. So I guess this is just good that we're getting it over with now.
As opposed to the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, who put out hits every year.
Yeah, seriously. Lou Reed deserved it, obviously, and so did Joan Jett. But I got to tell you, this is just kind of like a self-gratifying thing that the music industry does. It's like, yeah, we get it. You're successful. Okay. We're done here, though.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Adam.
No, I mean, what you're illustrating here is just sort of the classic problem that the Rock Hall has, is that there are bands that should be in there. And I would argue at some point, once we are far enough away from the 90s that we can really start to look at what happened as far as rock and roll goes, that Green Day might deserve to be in there, but not before the Smiths.
I agree. I also think that, you know, they might be overlooked. I think they're overlooking artists too. I mean, Operation Ivy, I'm pretty sure, is not in there, and they were a huge influence on Green Day.
Who else was nominated at this point? Like Kraftwerk.
You guys both bring up a good point, and the question is: does the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame measure excellence in music and influence, or do they measure sales? You know, or do they measure influence? I would argue probably both. I would argue that Green Day is more influential than the Smiths. That, and when I say that, I mean more bands were directly influenced by the Green Day sound, but Smiths are way better artistically, and so is Kraftwerk. So, I mean, if we're going on an artistic merit, you got to put in Smiths way before Green Day. But
it's a museum, right? So their job should be to walk that line and to make the call as to why is this worthy of inclusion in our museum. And sales can be a part of it, but artistic merit can also, you know, should also be a part of it. But they should be making that argument where, you know, as you go into there, there should be a bit, and I haven't been there for a few years, so I don't know if this exists, but there should be a big exhibit about the Monkees. And they've got to talk about, you know what, the Monkees were not artistically all that interesting, but they made a lot of waves in the culture because of the fact that they're on TV and because of this and this, this happened. And that's a interesting story to tell. And I think that they should be approaching things maybe like that, where they're going, you know what? Yeah, here's some stuff that is really artistically great. Here's some stuff that was culturally important. Here's some stuff that, you know, the public really, really liked. And they can tell that story via the way that they exhibit this stuff. It doesn't necessarily have to be like one way or the other. So,
I'm bringing this back more to punk rock. I think, you know, I'm not seeing enough punk rock bands doing what like the Sex Pistols did and tell them all to, like, you know, they didn't even show up. They just sent a note basically telling the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame to fuck off. They don't care. I worry that when, especially punk rock bands like Green Day, I don't think they are anymore, but I don't know why they're not like resisting this. And because this is kind of like a mashing of music that really punk rock was kind of, lashing out against. So I think institutionalizing these bands and the band and kind of making these icons that I don't think they originally set out to be.
I would argue that Green Day always kind of wanted to be famous. Like, I don't think Green Day was ever like a crass type band.
But I mean, there have been, I mean, the Clash and the Ramones were inducted.
I mean, not that they would show up. Why isn't Crass in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, you know? Why aren't the Specials, you know?
Well, why isn't Operation Ivy?
Or, why isn't Operation Ivy?
They were huge. 7 Seconds and honestly, Operation Ivy were huge to Green Day.
You could make the argument that Operation Ivy is more influential than Green Day. Because, I mean, really, Operation Ivy is the band or one of the few bands that really kickstarted third wave ska. Even though Operation Ivy isn't strictly third wave ska, how many third wave ska bands are there? And they were all, so many of them were influenced by Operation Ivy. Whereas, how many bands became big that sound like Green Day? You know,
but my question is, then it lets. I mean, how would you feel if you saw that Operation Ivy was getting inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Honestly, I'd love it because it means they're selling more records, and it would mean that you know the guys in the band that aren't as famous as the guys in Rancid are making money.
And then I think other people would say like this is just them, you know, rolling over to the big, you know, rock and roll, corporate-y people. So. I agree. I think they deserve their money, but
it's kind of phony. You know what I mean?
It's phony, but also it's like who are they to judge who can get into this Hall of Fame? You know, like this is kind of just made up and insanely self-congratulatory smugness that I just don't like. And that's why I don't like the Grammys. That's why I don't like the Oscars or the Emmys. It's such a echo chamber of shit. But that's just my opinion.
Echo chamber of shit. I like that. All right, let's keep on rocking. Let's add, what you have anything else to add to that?
No, I mean, I don't want to spend too much of our precious Christmas energy on this stupid thing.
Well, you know, it might be a white Christmas this year, so let's talk about something related to that.
Yes, that's the Christmas topic that everyone likes to talk about.
Go ahead, Adam, introduce us to this Christmas topic, this white Christmas topic.
So, you know, as is the season, we're going to talk about white power music. So, according to a report in Rolling Stone, Apple has removed 30 racist bands from its catalog. The action was taken after a report from the Southern Poverty Law Center, where iTunes was criticized for carrying 54 racist bands and and also listing some of the bands in the little listeners also bought section of the site. So these bands included Screwdriver, Max Resist, and the Bully Boys. So those guys are all removed. The Law Center also criticized Amazon and Spotify for failing to remove the same bands from their catalog. Now, the director of the SPLC's intelligence project said in a statement, "Apple is doing the right thing by preventing iTunes from being used as a recruitment tool for white supremacists. Amazon and the other online retailers that continue to sell music need to realize that they are providing a powerful platform for extremists to reach young people with messages that advocate hate and violence against African Americans, Jews, and others." So, that's what happened here. Which way you guys want to attack this, John? So white power music is off of iTunes.
I've got a lot to say about this. So I'll start with the easy angle, and then we'll get more difficult as we progress. First of all, we shouldn't even have to say it, but white power music, racist music, it's stupid. It's dumb. It's bad. You shouldn't be racist. You shouldn't listen to white power music. It's dumb. Second easy angle. Have you ever actually listened to white power music, Adam or Ricky? Like actually listened to it?
Yeah, because some kid was like started playing it to get a rise out of me.
It's like really bad. Like, well, yeah. Really, it's like I don't even mean the lyrics. I mean the music is just shitty. Like it's really really bad. One time I was actually, believe it or not, this is crazy. One time in the 50 Cent bin in the CD selection, I found a Screwdriver CD and a racist one at that. So I bought it. I'm like, let me listen to this just to see why people are attracted to this. And the lyrics are just boring and cliche. The music is bad and poorly recorded and poorly played. It's bad. And so I think the reason people like white power music is really they're not even into the music. It's really more of a clubhouse, you know, and they just, you know, find the music a way to be part of the clubhouse.
I agree with that. It's very much about like, you know, this is, you know, this is what the people that, you know, have my particular, you know, form of prejudice are listening to, and it allows them to kind of consolidate that social group around something. They're not there because they're music fans first and foremost.
True. Yeah. You know, I would even argue, and I could be wrong about this, but guys that are in like white power music groups, I mean, not bands, but like circles, I mean, they're racist, but I wonder if they're part of that group more for the community rather than the hatred of black people or whatever. Like, I think they're lost souls looking for direction, and it's a way to provide them direction. You know what I mean?
They are.
Yeah,
they're
using punk rock for community in the same way that a lot of us use punk rock for community. And I think that's the reason why you don't see a lot of, you know, you don't see a lot of white power, you know, jazz fusion coming up, because it's not the same kind of community that coalesces around that stuff. But for punk rock, you can be an angry, alienated, fucked up kid and find some, you know, find some like-minded people there. It just, if it just so happens that your form of angry, alienated, and fucked up is that you're a racist, well, I guess you can find those people too.
So let us proceed down our labyrinth of difficult topics. Let's address a slightly more difficult topic. The question is this a First Amendment issue? Is this a freedom of speech issue?
I have an answer too, just for later.
Ricky's answer is, I was going to say something racist. Okay, Ricky, what do you want? I was going to put it into Ricky's mouth.
John, go first. I just want to make sure
John's opinion is the law, and I'm sure it's right. I'm going to give you my emotional opinion to this, and then John can come in with the real one.
Adam, I'm going to bet that your and I emotional opinion jives, because our emotional opinion usually does jive.
Yeah, I don't know about this one. So what I would say, looking at this, and I disagree with some of our commenters in this sense, is that I'm totally fine with Apple removing whatever they want from their store, because it's a private business.
Yes.
And they can do whatever. This is totally different in my mind from, say, the government coming out and saying, you know, oh, this form of art is banned, or that this, you know, this type of speech is banned. Like, to me, yeah, okay, First Amendment is First Amendment. But this is a private business. They can do what they want. It's their store. In the same way that if you had a little corner record shop, you could choose not to stock Screwdriver records in your little corner record shop. The same way Apple can choose not to stock that stuff in their store. And I'm of the opinion that businesses, even big businesses, should be opinionated. You should give a shit about something. You should take a stand on some of this stuff if you have the power to do so. So I'm totally cool with them removing stuff from their store. No one has a God-given right to sell their products in Apple's marketplace or in anyone's marketplace. That's where I'm coming at with this.
Adam, our emotional angle does not jive.
That's what I thought.
Go ahead, Ricky. I'll respond after you two go.
Well, I totally agree with Adam on this one. I don't know if you guys saw how many comments and likes and stuff like that the Facebook post of this got.
Oh, it was insane.
It got a lot.
And the racists really came out of the woodwork on this one, like actually racist people, which I don't think you see that much anymore.
Probably because if it were anonymous, I bet – if it were like anonymous names, I bet we'd get a lot more. But that being said, I got to – I don't see this as – I think everyone needs to get like – a reality check here that Apple is no, I mean, iTunes is no real, it's just a digital version of a record shop. That's all it is. And I mean, 10, 15 years ago, I don't think Tower Records would have said, yeah, let's take the Screwdriver or Max Resist album and put it up for sale. I think it's up to them. If they're a private company, that's completely up to them. And the people that are saying that it's a freedom of speech issue, it really isn't, because no one can force Apple to sell something. And I saw a lot of people saying like, oh, they're being hypocritical because they should take all like hip hop down. Also, if they're going to do this, well, no, they're allowed to be hypocrites. That's the thing. The government government isn't supposed to be, but a private entity. Regardless of if they're like Apple and they're publicly traded or if they're just a small label, they're allowed to do what they want. So I don't even see a controversy here. There's nothing. I don't think there's an argument. There's a debate at all. I think arguing anything else is kind of moot because they're going to do what they want anyway. So
I like how Ricky's argument is dissenting opinions to mine are moot.
There aren't any. They're allowed to do what they want. And I mean, you have tons of, it's really no different if, I think Green Day actually had an issue with Walmart, like Walmart a while ago wouldn't sell their album uncensored. And so the deal didn't go through. and Walmart decided not to sell their album because of its content. And all sorts of private entities are allowed to speak their minds. Chick-fil-A did that dick, what I thought was a dick move, and came out against, you know, gay marriage. Then you have Target and, you know, Apple and all sorts of other places saying, yeah, no, we're for gay marriage and here's why. And I got to tell you, I think what Apple did was fine.
Well, I have to disagree with both of you, but before, let's define some things. People say, is this a free speech issue? If we're talking about governmental free speech, it is not a free speech issue, because free speech refers to whether or not the government exercises control over your speech and whether or not your speech is allowed or not. And free speech is not an absolute right. There's different tests, but that doesn't even matter here, because this is a private company, or actually technically a public company, but it's still a company exercising a choice of what it wants to promote, which is what it can do. People also say it's not censorship because it's not the government. That's incorrect. Governmental censorship would be when the government says you can't say something, but censorship can come from any authority. In this case, the censorship is coming from the authority of Apple. So it is censorship under the true definition of the word censorship. It's just not governmental censorship. What I would say, though, it is hypocritical of Apple to ban this music if they're saying the reason they're banning it is that it's racist, because there's lots of, you know, hip hop. I don't know if people know, you guys know the guy Paris. He's a rapper. He used to hang out with Public Enemy a lot. You know, he's very racist against white people, and I don't mind that. I enjoy his art, but he's just as racist against white people as these groups are against black people and Jewish people and that kind of a thing. So if Apple is saying they're banning it due to racism, then that's really just hypocritical. What if they say, we're not banning it because it's racist, we're banning it because that's what our consumer demands. That is, you know, we don't carry Mariah Carey cover CDs because no one buys Mariah Carey cover CDs. They could say, well, we don't cover this kind of music because our consumers don't want this kind of music. It's not a decision of race at all. That would be not hypocritical of Apple. But regardless of any of that, I think Apple should carry this music. The reason I do is obviously it's bullshit music. Obviously it's bad stuff to say. But I don't – as a music consumer, I don't need a company or whatever making my music decision choices for me, because if they're going to ban this – what if they ban anti-government stuff? You know, what if they ban stuff that could be, you know, sexually charged? What if they, because it all kind of gets, you know, anytime some people, like, the more offensive things are, the more likely it is to get banned. But after a while, our resistance to offense comes smaller and smaller until we find that we're banning things that we actually do want to keep. You know what I'm saying? The point of free speech is you don't defend the free speech that you agree with. You defend the worst of speech there is in order to protect the outermost limits of it. And the reason I bring this up is because this is not governmental free speech, but it's societal free speech. And societal free speech is a society's willingness and acceptance of people to have their own viewpoints. And more we censor people, and more we say these radical views can't be spoken, the range of acceptable speech becomes smaller and smaller and smaller until eventually, you know, you can only say the whole group has to agree with each other and people can have different points of view, which is a horrible thing to have. So as a society, I think we are becoming less accepting of speech, and not even via government standards, via private standards. And I think that's a very dangerous thing. And so I don't think it's dangerous to have this kind of music on iTunes. Because really, I would argue that not a single person that wasn't racist heard this music and became racist. All this music does is people that are already racist find it, you know, and then buy it or whatever. And honestly, they probably don't even sell that many tracks. So I'm much more comfortable defending stupid stuff like this than I am letting the bounds of acceptable societal free speech get closer and closer until I'm defending the stuff that I agree with and the stuff that I want to keep in the range of acceptable speech, if you will. So I just think this signals modern society's less willingness to address dangerous topics, and it's also society's modern society's unassuredness of itself. This isn't going to change my opinion of, you know, black people or Jewish people. I know it's terrible. If people really don't think enough of themselves, that they think this actually could sway them, then this stupid music is not the issue. We need to be better showing people how to have critical thought. That's my point, is we need to be training people how to have better critical thought. We don't need to be banning what people can and cannot hear because we're scared it might influence how they think.
Well, see, I agree with you that, like, people need to have, you know, that people need to think more critically about this. I also agree with you that, you know, that, yeah, that this music probably was not converting anyone. It was probably there for assholes that would already be into this sort of thing. But is Apple not allowed, you know, as a private entity to do whatever they want, whether it's hypocritical or not?
From a legal standpoint, they absolutely are. But I'm saying, as a society, we should strengthen free speech even without governmental power, because it is such an important right, or it is such an important virtue. I'm not saying legally they can't do it. I'm saying, if I was an attorney and they said, John, will you fight for us so we can ban this? I would say, absolutely, the law is clearly on your side. I'm arguing from a moral standpoint, not from a legal standpoint.
That's interesting, because you open up all these kind of slippery slopes here as to, like, as to what the responsibility of the business is in this case to society as a whole, and whether the business's responsibility falls on the lines of, you know, upholding these principles of free speech, or upholding these principles of, like, of, you know, of their own freedom as to not, you know, put stuff in their store they don't want to put in there.
Actually, let's not get too complex, but Adam, you just struck an extremely important chord. Adam, do you know the fundamental principle of American business? And it might even be of Canada business, but I'm not sure.
You all chant USA in parking lots.
No, it's called the shareholder primacy doctrine. And what that means, and it's the law, and it's what all corporation law is based off of, it's that businesses only owe a duty to shareholders. They do not owe a duty to anybody else, including society. So, I mean, that strengthens your argument.
Well, I mean, then I guess the interesting thing here would be, like, Apple is such a massive animal that is, you know, that is, of course, a publicly traded company and therefore has shareholders. But so it's, you know, it's definitely going to fall under that. I wonder what would happen if we had, say, a Class B corporation that had a big record store, where they're not necessarily bound by the shareholder primacy principle, then, where they can basically say, you know what, we're going to do some stuff because we think it actually helps society. Like, this is the kind of corporate designation that actually Ben and Jerry's, the ice cream people, have. So at that point, you know, that's where we're getting really into speculation here. But let's say you have a giant record store online and you have a Class B corporation where you're allowed to make decisions that aren't necessarily for the shareholders, but actually for some sort of societal purpose. And you're not necessarily bound to what the shareholders, you know, want to do for profit. That's interesting. I don't want to go there because we could talk about that for like 3 hours.
Well, let's wrap this up real quick, unless somebody else has something to add. People always say, you know, Screwdriver was good before they were racist. No, they weren't. Screwdriver was always terrible. The first Screwdriver record sucks. And the only reason people say it is because it's got this, like, interesting twist that the guy suddenly became racist. But Screwdriver sucks. Second to last thing about this is, very interesting thing about Screwdriver, the main guy is Ian Stewart. He is Screwdriver. Before he was in Screwdriver, he was in a Rolling Stones cover band. And actually, the Rolling Stones keyboarder is a guy called Ian Stewart, but a different Ian Stewart, which I always find that weird, you know, that there, Ian Stewart was in a Rolling Stones cover band. Meanwhile, the Rolling Stones piano player was a guy called Ian Stewart. But I can't figure out how this guy was racist, because the Rolling Stones music is clearly based in black American black music. Hypocritical, but what's contradictory? You know what I mean?
That probably is because when you're a bigot, you're usually not a bigot for sound principles.
let's talk about bigots, or maybe people that aren't bigots. Anti-flag.
That was the worst seg.
rewind. Let's talk about things that are also in the news.
Okay.
Anti-Flag, they had a show at a place called Altar Bar in Pittsburgh in February. However, the show promoter, a guy named Brian Drusky, he put this message up on Facebook during the Eric Gardner and Michael Brown protests. And I'm sure the Punk News listeners know Eric Gardner was the fellow that was choked to death. I think it was by a New York policeman for selling cigarettes. And Michael Brown was the young fellow that was shot by a police officer. And both of the police officers in those cases were not charged with any charges. That sounds weird. No charges were levied against either of those police officers in the death of those two young African-American men. So anyway, the promoter, here's what he put on his Facebook. He put, and this is me quoting him, "Man, I got pulled over last week and got a ticket because I was speeding. I'm just going to lay in the middle of a giant eagle as a protest. Just because." And then he also made a reference to a botched McDonald's orders in regards to Eric Garner and Michael Brown on his Facebook. So after Anti-Flag learned this, they canceled the show because the guy was kind of making fun of the Eric Garner and Michael Brown protests. And here's what Anti-Flag said in part. "Based on recent actions, we feel that Brian Drusky, the owner of the company promoting our show in Pittsburgh, is on the wrong side of the conversation. For this reason, we do not feel comfortable playing a show he's promoting. Confronting bigotry and blind allegiance to power with education is something Anti-Flag believe in." After the show cancellation, Drusky spoke to Pittsburgh City Paper and he said, "I was just frustrated. I made a couple of comments. There was a lot of Twitter movement and people talking about it. I was like, wow, I didn't realize what he did." He then put an apology on Facebook and he said his remarks were an attempt to be funny. However, they were not funny, and to a lot of people, because I made light of something that I... Oh, they were not funny because I made fun of something that I did not fully understand. He also said, and I don't know how much stock you want to put in this, he also said he's going to do a benefit for Leon Ford, a guy paralyzed after being shot by the police. So Anti-Flag canceled the show. A lot of people said, Anti-Flag, you should have kept up the show. A lot of people said, Anti-Flag, good for you for canceling the show. Although, actually, they took a lot of hate on Facebook, Anti-Flag. Where do you guys stand on this? Because, I mean, in some ways, it's very similar to the Apple issue.
I hate Anti-Flag. I just, you know, I'm not going to come on. I'm not going to disagree with them on the recent events with the police, but I really cringe every time they get involved in something like this. I was like, when I saw this, I'm like, first thing I thought of, like, when's another comp going to come out? You know? I realize this wasn't, like, their fault, but I feel like this didn't need to get super blown up. Sure, it was a bad joke, a few bad jokes destroy it, like, had it made a whole show move. I mean, I think these guys need to kind of chill out just a little. I'm not saying they're wrong about stuff, but at the same time, I wouldn't be at the show. So even if they were playing here, I just don't like them. They rub me the wrong way, and I don't know why. They're on that list for me with, like, the transplants, and I avoid them. And that's all I have to say.
I'm not sure exactly where I stand on this, and I think it's because I'm of course outside of the Pittsburgh community, but it's been in the city, it was a lot bigger, I think, of a blow up than it became online, and there was a lot of back and forth locally and a lot of hand-wringing in the local papers there about this. I mean, Anti-Flag have the right to cancel whatever they want, so sure, yeah. Go ahead. This guy doesn't necessarily sound like he was, you know, this guy wasn't singing for Screwdriver or anything. He was just a dumbass. So I don't know. How much does this guy, get punished by the artists for, you know, being kind of a lunkhead? I'm not sure. Like, does this, do these stupid jokes that he was making online end up, like, sinking his entire promoting career now? Or at some point, does this blow over? Like, that's really what I'm more curious about for this. Is, like, is this guy now just done? Like, he is blacklisted? Because at what point does what he say become, accepted enough that punk rock people can then go play his shows again? Or is he just out?
Well, honestly, I don't know the guy personally, but it seems, well, Was he sorry because he got caught, or was he sorry because he was sorry? That's the question. If he's sorry because he was sorry, I hope it blows over. I don't think it's going to ruin this guy's career, you know, if it is a career or if he just does it for fun. I guess we have another slippery slope argument is, I mean, if you have a promoter handling your show, do we investigate every bad thing they might have done, and then we judge on whether or not they're moral enough to promote our show? You know, it seems that it seems that, again, we have a slippery slope, and this is due in part to modern technology, in that, you know, now that everything's public online where it used to be private, people can look and investigate you. And I mean, if this happened, you know, 10 years ago, the guy would have made some dumb comment to his friend and no one would have known anything, and any flag would have played the show and no one would have known. We talked about was it Adam? Oh, never mind.
Yeah, I'm Adam.
Oh, I think you said something.
I was going to, but you can go.
Last week we talked about how much of anti-flag is exploitation of tragedy rather than a way to fight against tragedy. And this kind of walks the fence, if you ask me. You know, they're like, we're anti-flag. We're anti-racism so much that we're going to cancel our show because of some guy's Facebook post. That's how proper we are, you know?
So, I mean, this is where I was going to come out with this. Let's rewind this whole scenario, go back in time, and play this out this way, and tell me if this is not a more powerful statement that they make. This guy does his stupid stuff on Facebook. It blows up to the degree that it blew up. But Anti-Flag don't pull their show. So they don't pull their show. It doesn't necessarily blow up then as much online as it did. I mean, them pulling the show became more of a catalyst for this. So then they go, they play the show. And while they're on stage, they stop between a couple songs and they're like, hey, the guy that booked this posted this shit online and we don't agree with that. So fuck him and we don't want any fucking money for this show. And then they finish playing the show.
And then let him keep
the money? Don't take the guy's money. Leave. Does that not come off as more, I don't know, more of a statement?
It does, except for they're giving him an incredible windfall for making a stupid statement. They should take the money and do it, like, you know, use it for some good purpose, like Crass would.
Okay, sure. Take the money and then, you know, bring someone up on stage and hand it to that guy and have him go do something with it or whatever, right? I mean, like, I feel like if you were gonna really, you know, milk this kind of thing for making a statement, you know, you could still do something like that. You know, basically, like, still slap the promoter's hand, but don't necessarily pull this kind of nuclear option where you're like, you know, no one else work with this guy.
And also, you know what, though, related to that is we see this a lot in punk rock. It's sort of a high horse position. It's like, you know, I've never done anything bad in my life. So if you do something bad, you're a horrible person. You know, people make mistakes. And I think punk rock could use a little bit more of, well, it is the Christmas season. So forgiving and goodwill towards one fellow man.
I'm slowly seeing. I'm not saying what this guy's jokes were like in good taste. I'm just what I'm slowly seeing is punk rock's overall sense of humor and ability to take things lightly, kind of die. I think that's why we saw the Dwarves get so much flack for their album cover.
Yeah, but true. But you know what? They don't in real life though. You guys seem to love them.
I know they don't in real life, but I worry that that punk rock is slowly turning into the politically correct police, and I worry about that because I think a huge part of punk rock is being able to voice your opinion without, you know, being challenging other people's at the same time. I just worry it's this kind of allegiance to a band's political beliefs that has become so strong that punk rock is losing its sense of humor, which kind of drew me to it originally. So I just hope these guys kind of lighten up in the future. And I find them to be, you know, opportunists too. I really do. In the way that, like, you know, PETA is I find PETA to be opportunist too. It's like every time there's something bad happens, they're on it, and they're releasing something new.
Or they're releasing as many enemies on this show tonight as you can.
This is the
Ricky versus the world show.
I'm sorry. For some reason, this band, I think I'm kind of going off on them because they just, even before all this stuff, they just kind of rubbed me the wrong way and I never could get into them. So I'm going to.
Oh, hold on a second, Ricky. Someone's at the door.
Who is it?
I'll get it.
What do?
Why, it's Joel Tannenbaum of Plow United. Joel, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. I'm delivering these wreaths. Did you guys order a wreath?
Wow. Thanks, Joel. We're just waiting for Santa to arrive. Do you think he'll show up tonight?
I have no idea.
Well, you know, I love Christmas this time of year, Joel. You know, it reminds me of the cocoa, you know, the wreaths, the trees. And in fact, Joel, you love Christmas, don't you?
I think it's okay.
You know, I always thought you loved Christmas, Joel, because your last name is Tannenbaum, which means Christmas tree.
You know, John, you are the first person to ever point that out to me in my entire life.
Wow, it's a Christmas miracle.
It is.
Joel, you know, it's such a Christmas miracle. I see you brought your guitar with us. You brought a guitar with your wreath. Joel, would you do another Christmas miracle and sing us a song?
Yeah, I think I can do that, actually. All right, this song is called The Best Christmas Pageant Ever. Ready?
We're ready, Joel.
Yeah.
Imogene and Claude and Ralph and Leroy, Ollie, Gladys, drinking wine and smoking cigs and stealing stuff from Woolworths, slowly headed down the way to jail by way of juvie, till Imogene got it in her head to play Mary in the pageant. This is gonna be the best Christmas pageant ever. The best Christmas pageant ever. Best Christmas pageant ever. If we have to kill somebody. If we have to kill somebody. Hey, thanks, guys.
Joel, that was beautiful, Joel. Joel, it's so wonderful to see you on Christmas. Thanks for stopping by. Thanks for bringing a wreath. Thanks for playing that beautiful song. And goodwill to you, my fellow man, Joel Tannenbaum, or should I say Joel Christmas Tree?
And to you. Be good, y'all.
All right, Joel. Well, we'll see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Thanks,
Joel. Wow, guys. How nice was it for Joel Tannenbaum to stop by and bring us this beautiful wreath?
It was awesome.
Well, now that Joel's well on his way to the next house, let's keep talking about our punk rock script, our punk rock news, while we wait for Santa to come down the chimney. In fact, one of my favorite bands, Off, they've just released a new music video featuring Jack Black. It's the sequel to their last music video, and it's called Meet Their God. And in the video, basically Keith Morris and Jack Black fight a bear. Did you guys enjoy this music video?
I like the description of that. That's what happens.
Yeah, I love this. I thought this was awesome. This is such an, I mean, only Off could kind of pull this off. Especially, this isn't the first time Jack Black has been in their videos, is it?
No, he's been in a bunch. He was in one before this, and he was in one before that as well.
Right.
Maybe even two before that.
Huh. Okay. I love this. This was really cool. I thought the effects were funny, and how he eats his own guts. That was gross, but funny too.
Adam. Yeah, this was another. Sorry, I completely. I don't know what happened there. The Christmas spirit just overtook me for a minute, and then I made awkward silence happen. Anyways, yeah. So this was also fun. I did not have as much fun as I did on the first half of this video, and I think it's only because I had been primed for more zaniness, and the first time I didn't really know what was going on going into it, but you know. They fight a bear. They do this wonderful thing in this video where they just keep cutting between footage of a real bear and some guy in a bear suit. And they do not at all try to make that look good, which I appreciate because it just kind of ups the level of goofiness about it. So yeah, this was fun and funny.
Well, there you have it. Speaking of something that'll be, well, I don't know if this will be fun or funny, but it'll be interesting. Meredith Graves of Perfect Pussy and Shoppers has announced that she's going to release a solo album next year. She's also going to release a split EP with Kevin Devine. You know, Perfect Pussy's been a wildly hip band this year, a band a lot of people taking notice of. They're very loud, very aggressive. They talk about feminists and sexuality, but that's not all they talk about. Are you guys excited for this? Did you guys like Perfect Pussy? Did you guys like Shoppers? what do you think people are going to get from this? Is this going to be hard and mean? Is it going to be more subtle?
I feel like I need the primer on this band. They've been talked about so much by the various they're one of those bands that this year have really fallen into the realm of bands that will be talked about by the Pitchfork crew, but will also be kind of talked about by, you know, stuff down in our less arty gutter.
Yeah.
Every year there's like a couple bands that are straddling kind of like the punk and indie scenes that end up in that position. And
Piss Jeans.
Piss Jeans will do that. I mean, Fucked Up has done that before. What else? Like Vivian Girls, that kind of thing has happened to Titus Andronicus. Yeah. But, and I'm usually hip to all that stuff, but I don't think I've heard anything from Perfect Pussy this year. So I don't know what to go. I don't know what to say. Is this worth me checking out? Put yourself in the shoes, John, of the Adam Whites of the world who have not yet jumped on this bandwagon. Is it a bandwagon worth jumping on?
It is. I think the best is yet to come. I believe it. I'm going to sound like trying to be cool here, but I'm not. I actually saw Shoppers before anybody knew who they were at 1234 Go Records. I did a review of this. Like, it might even have been their first live review, to tell you the truth. They were cool. They were very loud, very noisy. It reminded me a lot of Eve Libertine style Crass. And this is like the fourth time I've brought up Crass in this podcast. Perfect Pussy is actually a little bit more traditional. Traditional in that it's not quite as cacophonic, if that's a word. It's not quite as noisy, although it is very noisy. If you like White Lung, you might like this because it's very intense. It's very loud. It's very powerful. The only thing is, and I have this issue with a lot of, I guess, like Pitchforky type music, is there's not enough bass in it. It's all treble, so it almost is kind of irritating to your ears. You know what I mean? I wish there was more rumble on the lower end. That's really just a quibble with the production. It's not a quibble with the band. The band's pretty wild live. It's worth checking out. But I think Meredith Graves' solo LP, as long as it's not, you know, solo goes acoustic, as long as it's a full band, I think it'll be her best work by far. I think she's a rising talent, and she's got some really neat musical ideas, that's for sure.
Yeah, I also don't know too much about Perfect Pussy or Shoppers, so I might give this a look and then kind of...
Oh, this is that thing people write us letters about.
Oh, is it? I'm sorry.
Why do you guys talk about shit that you don't know about, and then we do anyways?
I'm not gonna lie and say I know every band. I just
no. That's what the listenership wants.
Okay, fine. I love this band, listeners.
Well, a lot of websites do that. I don't know if people realize that or not. And I guess punk news is a little bit more honest. When I say other websites, I'm not dissing on anybody that's kind of our contemporaries. I mean, websites that are a lot bigger than punk news. Like, they act like they're experts on bands, but it's only just because they researched them a whole bunch before they wrote about an article, you know? And so maybe we should research before we go on the podcast. Let's talk about something we know a whole lot about. Let's talk about the Ramones. How about that?
Who? All right.
D-Cracks and Zatopex, which are kind of two smaller bands that have a fan base out in the UK, they're releasing a split 7-inch. But the kicker is, on the split 7-inch, they're covering D.D. Ramone's Standing in the Spotlight LP. And you say, John, what's the Standing in the Spotlight LP? That's D.D. Ramone's unfortunate rap album. And honestly, on eBay, it goes for like $200 because it's so in demand, this album. I just think this is a clever and funny thing for them to do because people always cover the classics. These two guys are literally covering probably the worst Ramones tunes. Even though they're terrible, they sort of do have their charm, to tell you the truth, these terrible songs. I mean, it's not good music, but it's amusing. But I say kudos to these guys for covering probably Ramones. These guys have found the Ramones songs that have never been covered before, which is not an easy thing to do.
Okay, let's qualify has its charms. I mean, like, Poor Little Rich Girl has its charms. Mashed Potato Time is pretty...
I love Mashed Potato Time.
No, you don't.
Well, I don't. I love it. I don't love it ironically, but I don't truly love it. I find it amusing.
Yeah. In the same way that if, like, I don't know, like, a dog fell down a flight of stairs but didn't hurt itself... You'd be like, oh, stupid dog, why'd you do that?
Right? Adam, you just described D.D. Ramone's entire life, a dog falling down without hurting himself.
Look, I like Dee Dee, but mashed potato time is such a fucking stupid thing.
But how about these guys covering, having the balls to cover it?
I like the cover better than the original. I think this is actually kind of a fun thing because, yeah, it's definitely stuff that no one else would touch. It would sort of smack of, you know, trying to be ironic, but I don't know. Maybe it's because I'm not in the UK, so I don't really know these guys. But like, I don't know. These are, as far as I can understand it, pretty small bands covering, you know, despite its infamy, some pretty obscure music. That's a long way to go just for the sake of like a winking irony. So, you know, the band sounds like they're into it. It's their version of it is way more, I don't know, it's way more fun and less just goofy than Dee Dee's version. So, you know, kudos to them for finding some, you know, unplunged territory to go do this.
Are they commenting that the Ramones, although often treated as infallible, were not actually infallible when it comes to music? Are they making that comment? Are they saying the Ramones are infallible, and we will show you peons who don't understand the genius of Dee Dee Ramone how to understand the genius of Dee Dee Ramone?
I think what they're doing is they're going, you know what, Dee Dee Ramone, warts and all, you were an awesome, you know, thing that happened, so we're going to play some of your dumb songs and have fun with them. I think that's it. I don't think there's a whole lot of commentary in there.
Yeah, I remember seeing, I think I saw one of the music videos Dee Dee did for one, I forgot which song it was, but it was like kind of cringeworthy. I think now this definitely has some like, definitely some humor behind it. And I think it's, maybe they're just thinking like, you know what, let's see what happens. This might just be a musical experiment.
Well, there you have it. You know, there's the annual punk rock festival, Punk Rock Bowling. The lineup has been announced. It's going to be May 23rd, 24th, 25th. And as always, they've got some pretty big punk rock names for Punk Rock Bowling. They've got Rancid, Dropkick Murphys, Refused, who are back again apparently, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Conflict, Discharge, Sick of It All, Jello Biafra, Anti-Flag, Ricky's favorite band, Swingin' Utters, Wilhelm Screams, The Muffs, The Mahoney's, and Murder City Devils. There's nothing really mind-blowingly surprising on this list. These are all bands, well, Conflict, I guess, is a surprise. But, I mean, these are all bands that people have seen time and time again. But it is a pretty solid lineup.
Oh, it's an incredibly solid lineup. I think it's actually really... You could get some really neat shows out of that. Now, I haven't been to Punk Rock Bowling in about 4 or 5 years. And when we used to go, because we used to go every year with Punk News would send a team. For a while, we were sending two teams. And not just for the music festival. Like, we would bowl in the tournament badly. But we used to do that. And it was a lot smaller of an enterprise for most of the years when we did it, and there was really like a show where there was one show on Saturday night that had, you know, whatever was going on, and then, you know, there might have been kind of like an after party-ish smaller show that would happen on Sunday night. But then year on year, as this thing grew and more people came in, the last year that I was at it, it had sort of developed into really more of like a music festival. And there were shows, but those shows were on, you know, a stage with banners and sponsor names on the banner and all this crazy stuff. I mean, the Punk News was one of them. But it was a super different vibe as that developed. So I don't know what it's like now, or if it's gone from there to something different. So I'm looking at this and thinking back to smaller shows and going like, holy shit, like a Rancid, Dropkick Murphys, Refused, Mighty Mighty Boss Tones, Turbo Negro show would be bananas. And those are not even bands I would necessarily expect to see on stage together. And so that's really cool. But I got a feeling this is probably more of like a music festival kind of stage setup. And that level of intimacy isn't necessarily going to be there. But I don't know. I haven't been there in a few years, so I can't really comment on it.
What I can't, from the like videos that I've seen, I think it has become kind of more of a music festival-ish kind of thing, like you were saying. I've never been, but what I love about this is that usually bands that are going to be doing punk rock bowling do like a West Coast tours before they go to punk rock bowling. So I'm able to catch them before they go there, which is what happened last year, actually. Well, last May, I was able to see a bunch of bands like in a row. I was able to see Against Me, Leftover Crack in the Attics before they, and they were all going the next weekend to punk rock bowling. So that's, so I kind of get the fallout from this festival. Now, what I thought was interesting, and this band keeps, I know I keep bringing them up, but Pears are, got onto the bill too. And they've only been around like since the summer. So that's, I think that's pretty fast to get onto this, to this lineup. But I, if I could go, I would. It looks a lot like a lot of fun.
I have really some of my fondest punk news memories were, you know, were us getting together at punk rock bowling. I mean, because that was the first time when like a lot of us in that original crew even met each other in person. So this was back when it would have been like, you know, like myself, Aubin, Scott Heisel, Chris Moran, Brian Schultz, Justin August, like we were sounding kind of like that group was going down there. And there was always stuff that happened that was just, or Rich Verducci as well, of course, early podcast host. And just like all kinds of like crazy things would happen at there that I don't know where I ever would have had that experience again. And I mean, I remember the one year, the big story that came out of it that just became the biggest punk news in joke ever was former reviews editor Brian Schultz at one point. He ended up somehow not having a room the one night and then just ended up bunking with like a bunch of the guys from the Casualties. And then that became that became a big thing. The one year I ended up getting confronted by both Brandon Cruz of Dr. No and what was the other guy who was also a Dead Kennedys singer?
Jeff Penalty. Adam, so this is an insane story. I've never heard
over
this.
The same weekend, we're bowling. We have Punk News bowling shirts on. This is right in the midst of like all the Dead Kennedys drama, and we were really on the Jello side of the Dead Kennedys drama when this was happening. So this dude who's this kind of like he's pretty short dude, but he's like, you know, he's clearly hardened by just years of being a punk rocker, right? This little guy covered in tattoos, he just is fucking mean looking, just kind of like walks up to me and he's just like, hey. And I'm like, hi. He's like, I'm Brandon Cruz. And I'm like, oh no. the things we've said, but he was actually really, really cool. And so was Jeff, and both of them actually were super cool to us and super, you know, interesting to talk to, and you know, they had their perspectives on things and how things went, but they, you know, they didn't try to kill us or anything like that, but like he let it hang in the air for a few seconds there where we're just like, uh-oh. It's like us taking a side and this Dead Kennedys thing has now come back to bite us, but it didn't. But yeah, so I don't know. There's all kinds of stuff like that happened, or just like people I got to meet, and like I don't know. I don't want to name drop, but I don't know.
Did you get to meet Bono?
I didn't get to. All right, I didn't get to meet Bono. Really early on, we went for an amazing dinner with Fat Mike the one night that was just like just crazy. And this was back when Fat was still where Toby from Red Scare was still working at Fat, and Floyd was still working at Fat, and Vanessa who now does Fat's PR was there, and Aaron was there because this was back before they split up. So we got to go for this super amazing, way too generous dinner with the Fat crew the one night, which was really, really neat. And this was I hate talking about it because it sounds like a ooh, look at how much access we had kind of thing. But for me, it was just like, you know, I was still so young. I was in my early 20s, so it was just like mind-blowing that these people even wanted to talk to me. You know, let alone the fact that we went out for dinner. So, you know, the guys from Hopeless, we hung out with them at the one casino the one night, and that was really super cool. I remember actually, it was so small during those years. I mean, it was even smaller before we got involved, but it was still small that there would be just people hanging around and getting into situations. I remember Matt Skiba got kicked off the floor at one point because he was carded and he didn't have ID on him and they couldn't figure out how old he was. I know that that Virgil from Suburban Home was like a blackjack monster, where we would go and we would sit down at like the $5 blackjack tables and be like, me and Scott Heisel and Virgil and maybe Chris Moran from Punk News were there, and we would play for, you know, a couple hands. We were maybe more, maybe we were there for an hour or something like that, but we're not seriously gambling, and we don't have the money to do it either. So, you know, we'd play a little while and lose because we suck, and then we would go somewhere to drink. And then we would come back at like 3 a.m. and Virgil would still be there at the table, and he would look haggard, like he had been up and down the roller coaster. And there was a lot of that. We'd run into people as the weekend would progress, and they would just look more rough and beat up. The one year when we ran into Toby from Red Scare, you know, we're sitting around drinking like mimosas the one morning because that's what our alcohol of choice became after we were drinking all night.
Adam, this is turning into like a Vice editorial.
It is like a Vice editorial. And like Toby would wander around the corner and just look like he had like crawled out of the sewer. We're like, you have no idea what happened to Toby. He's not going to tell you, but whatever it was fairly dramatic. And you could tell that like he was doing everything he could to just not die. So yeah, this is the Adam name drop stuff. Part of it, but that's what my punk rock bowling memories were like. So you know, I don't want to be one of those people that was like, oh, it was better back in the day, because like I honestly haven't been there in 5 years or so, but you know, it's something I super close to my heart, super fond memories of it. You know, huge kudos to the Stearns and BYO for putting this sucker on, because it was cool.
Wow, would you look at the time, it's already almost midnight.
Well, it looks like Santa isn't coming this year.
Don't you see, Adam? Santa isn't really a person. He's an idea, a notion. He represents the idea that mankind can have world peace, despite what the Cro-Mags tell us. He's the personification of goodwill to our fellow man. You see, Adam, there's a little bit of Santa in every single one of us.
What's that ruckus?
It's coming from the chimney.
Oof. It doesn't get any easier as you get older. Juicing. My buttukus.
Santa!
Ho, ho, ho! Merry Christmas, boys! Merry Christmas! Ho, ho, ho!
Santa, you do exist.
I knew you wouldn't let us down.
Ho, ho, ho! Well, of course I exist, boys. And do you know what I've brought with me?
Selfies?
What? No, I've brought presents! Ho, ho, ho!
Presents!
John, my boy, have you been good this year?
I have, Santa!
Wonderful! Wonderful! What do you want for Christmas?
Well, Santa, if you don't mind, I'd like an officially released live album by Flag.
Well, let me see here. Ah! Here it is! Here you go, John! Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas!
Wow! Thanks, Santa!
Now, Adam, have you been good this year?
Eh.
Well, what would you like from Santa if you were good?
Could I have a Don Mattingly rookie card?
But of course, my boy, here you go.
Wow, Don Mattingly. I don't even get the sports reference, but thanks, Santa.
And how about you, Ricky? I know you've been good. What would you like for Christmas?
Aw, I don't get any presents.
Santa. Why not, my boy?
I'm Jewish.
Oh, ho, ho, ho! Ricky, my boy! You're right, you don't get any presents. No, it doesn't matter if you're Jewish, Ricky, because Christmas is for everyone, no matter their belief system.
I'm pretty sure that's not right, Santa.
Shut up, kid. Ricky, you see, Christmas is not a time for spending, for separating from your fellow man, but a time for joy and giving. generosity and caring. You see, you better watch out. You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you why. Santa Claus is stalking you and coming to town.
Merry Christmas.
And Happy New Year from the Punk News Podcast.